Recently, I read what most people call the Lord's Prayer. And the part that caught my attention was when Jesus said, "Give us this day our daily bread." And I thought to myself, I don't know that I ever asked the Lord, "Give me this day my daily bread." I may have said it in reciting the prayer or reading it, obviously, when like how I just did from Scripture, but it's not something that I say regularly, and I certainly don't say it daily. Moreover, I do not believe I've heard anyone else say this prayer. Do you ask the Lord every day, "Lord, give me my daily food"? Now, I'm sure that someone, whether here or when it gets on the internet, because, you know, we record all these and I put them on our webpage. I don't know if there's going to be someone who says, "Don just said he doesn't give thanks for his food." And no, that's not what I've said. I give thanks for my food every day. I give thanks to God at every meal. So I'm very thankful. But here, Jesus wants us to ask for the necessities of life, such as our daily bread, just that basic staple of life that we need and eat. And I think, with me, because I live in the United States of America, and because during the whole time that I've been an American citizen, food has always been super abundant. If there's a drought, I mean, wherever the drought is, okay, it's going to hurt the farmers in that area, but we'll get our food from somewhere else. We'll get it from someplace else in America. We'll get it from Mexico, Central America, or even South America. I mean, think about it. We eat bananas in Grants Pass, Oregon, in the middle of winter. We just have it so good that I just always assume the food will be there. And so all I really need to do is say, "Thank you for the food." So I'm recognizing that he gives it. But I don't know that I can always make that assumption. Or that we should always make that assumption. As you know, in the Bible, there are plenty of times when there were famines, there were droughts, and people couldn't eat. And this caused great movements of people, such as, well, how did Israel, or why did Israel, the family, end up in the land of Egypt? It was because of a famine that was in the whole Middle East at that time, and maybe even beyond. But because God worked through Joseph to make sure that Egypt had food, you know, that's why people were coming there, including the family of Jacob and Israel. But there have been people who have moved here to America because of that. I mean, like, what about the great potato famine in Ireland? That's why a lot of the Irish moved here, because, well, there was no food there and there was here. And I suppose a lot of people are coming across the border now, our southern border, because, among other things, we have a superabundance of food here. I mean, it's just amazing the food we have in America. When you go into a mission field, they train you for culture shock, because it's going to be different. I don't care what nation you go from to what other nation you go to, you're going to experience culture shock. And so I was trained for that, and I was prepared for that when I went to Russia. But I wasn't prepared for reverse culture shock. That really touched me deeply, because over there, I don't know if they do it now, but during that time in the 90s, people would stand in these long lines wrapped around the block just to get a loaf of bread, or to get a little bit of meat, or to get some milk. And then I come back to America, and the first store that I walk into is the big superstore, you know, that is headquartered in Arkansas. I think Klamath Falls was the first one that had that store in Oregon, and I was like, I told my family, you have no idea what I'm looking at here. And I've even had that experience since I've been here. Because, as you know, I've traveled. I've gone to Peru and other places. And I come back and I'm like, I just can't believe all the varieties of chips that we have. Or soda drinks. Or toothpaste. Or toothbrushes. And all the different kinds of food that we have. It's just... And I remember looking at that same kind of store here in town where I get my medicine, and I was looking around as I was waiting in line, and I thought, you know what? Probably in 24 hours, all of the stuff that I'm looking at will be gone, and new stuff will be on the shelves already, and we won't even know it. So for us to say, God, give us this day our daily bread, is just not something that we think about. It's always there. You can hate God or believe that God doesn't exist. And you still have a superabundance of food in this place where we live. So a couple of weeks ago, I applied this to sleep. I also told you about a week or so ago that I've discovered something new that I wanted to tell you about. And I said it has to do with something at night. And this is it. This is what I want to talk about. Sometimes sleep is non-existent, or there's not much of it during the night, is there? But we just always assume, okay, it's bedtime, I go to bed, and I'm going to have a night of rest. And I'll get up in the morning and go to work. But it doesn't always work like that. And it never occurred to me to start praying the same thing as I should be praying about my bread, my daily bread, as for my nightly sleep. So when I began this sinus infection about 2 weeks ago, I'm in the living room in a recliner, you know, because I can be elevated and it helps to drain the sinuses, as you probably know. And I couldn't go to sleep. I was getting frustrated about it. So I started thinking about Matthew 6. You know how your mind just starts going on things. Well, sometimes mine works on sermon ideas. And I started thinking about, you know, Jesus, what he said in... excuse me, the Lord's Prayer or the model prayer. Give us this day our daily bread. And I thought, why can't I say the same thing about my sleep? Should I be praying to God every night, dear Lord, please give me my nightly sleep? Now, I've always been thankful for sleep. It's not unusual for me in the morning when I'm praying for my food and thanking God for it that I also say thank you for the night of rest. And I say thank you that I have a warm and secure place to sleep. I mean, that means a lot to me, and I'm sure it means a lot to you as well. But I started thinking about this more and more, and so I thought, I'm going to apply this. I'm going to do it right now. And I just poured out my heart to God there on that recliner in our living room. And I ask God, you know, even as you give me my daily bread, please, tonight, give me my nightly rest, my nightly sleep. You know how much I need it because you created my body to need it one third of the day. That makes sleep pretty important, doesn't it? And I just started talking to him about why I think I need sleep. And I talked to him about why he knows that I need sleep, and God, you know how much sleep I need. And before I knew it, I was asleep, and I was in a deep sleep, and I loved it. Unfortunately, right now I'm taking some medicine where I have to go to the restroom every 90 minutes around the clock, 24 hours a day. So even in bed, I'm getting up every 90 minutes to go to the restroom. And so I woke up and realized, wow, I was really sleeping. Thank you, God. So I come back, and I can't go back to sleep. So I thought, why not do the same thing? I talked to God about sleep again. Why I need it, why He knows I need it, and how much more He knows I need for this night. Boom. I was out again. And so the next time I woke up, same routine. And now I'm doing it all the time. When I lay down in bed, I put my head on the pillow, and I pray the same prayer. And when I get up during the night, same thing again. But there's been a few times when I've missed. And I was like, all of a sudden this guilt came over me, and I was like, no, don't break this habit. You are starting to form a habit. Don't break it. So I rebuked myself and prayed again. And I got the sleep that I needed. And there's been those times where you're really close to the time that you would typically wake up or would like to wake up. And I'm like, I know that I need some more sleep, but I don't know how much. God, You know. You know how much I need. You know what I need to do today. You know the condition of my body. You know how I'm dealing with this infection, so forth and so on. So please help me to get the sleep that You know that I need. And that worked again. I didn't go for a full 90 minutes. I got as much sleep as I needed. There's been a few times where I didn't go back to sleep at all, and I realized that's because I've already gotten all the sleep that I needed. And I thanked God for answering my prayers. Thanked Him and praised Him. So, I've concluded that along with counting sheep, or rather instead of counting sheep, talk to the shepherd. And not just about your problems. Notice that in what I've just said to you, it's not like I have all these problems or these burdens or these things that I'm worrying about. Excuse me. Sinus infection is making me very dry. So I wasn't talking about all that stuff. I just talking about sleep itself. And putting my life in God's hands, or acknowledging that my life is already in His hands, somehow just gave me the sleep that I needed. However, I want to add that this is not a license. I'm not trying to give all of us a license to do those things, especially later in the evening, that keep us from sleeping. Even as He gives us our daily bread, yet we still have to pay attention to what we eat, how much we eat, avoiding gluttony and just a whole host of other things. In other words, we have our part to play. And don't think we can just pray to God in spite of ourselves doing things to keep us from sleeping. We ask for our daily bread, but that doesn't keep us from working for our daily bread, shopping for our daily bread, preparing for our daily bread, and so on. You understand that. There's the part that God does, and there's the part that He wants us to do. He has control of our lives, but He's also given to us a measure of control over our lives, and He wants us to be responsible with it. So sometimes we may still have troubles with sleep, and we cannot sabotage ourselves by doing things that keep us from sleeping. We pray for God about needing sleep, but we also have to be responsible about getting the sleep that we need and doing the things that would bring that about. We don't want to just be irresponsible in our Christian lives. I think every one of us will know what Jacob meant in Genesis 31, as he was explaining a situation that he was going through. And he said this in Genesis 31:40. There I was in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Now, I have no doubt that Jacob believed in God 100%. I don't see anywhere in the biblical story, especially up to this point, where he didn't believe God. He goes through times of weakness, but he always believed in God. And he also worked hard. I have no doubt about that. But sometimes, in spite of all those things, sleep is still difficult. Just sometimes, that's the way it happens. Even as we get our daily bread, and sometimes we may still get food, that's bad and makes us sick. Have you ever had food poisoning before? I hope you don't ever get it. I got it one time, and man, I was really sick. It was really bad. Now turn to Psalm 127, and thank you, Dominic, for your reading of this great passage. The title of my sermon tonight is, He Gives His Beloved Sleep. And I took that from the last line of the scripture reading that we had earlier. So listen to Psalm 127 again. I believe this psalm was written by King Solomon. And he said, beginning in verse 1, Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he gives his beloved sleep. If you know and believe, for example, that the Lord is building your house, and I don't think Solomon here is referring to the structure that we live in, but like the house of Solomon, the house of David, the house of rule, the house of Calvert, or the house of Crisp, or whatever. If you know that the Lord is building your house, building your family, you don't have to worry and fill yourself with sorrows, eating the bread of sorrows, preventing you from sleeping. But you know that the Lord is running your life. If you know and believe that the Lord watches over your city, that He is the one who sees to it that your city has what it needs, you don't have to worry and fill yourself with sorrows preventing you from sleeping. Because He gives you sleep. If you trust in Him, if you know that He's running the world, He's running the show, He's totally aware of what's going on, He knows your life, He knows your community and all those things, then you also know that He will give you sleep and He'll take care of it while you're sleeping. Just know that the Lord has been taking care of you since way before you even thought about the fact that you had to worry about your life. I mean, think about it. You were conceived and for 9 months you were in your mother's womb. How much did you worry about life at that time? Well, I would say zilch, which means zero. How about during the first year of your life? Or the second year? In fact, pretty much your whole childhood, you're not worrying. But all of a sudden, we become adults, and although the Lord is the one who's gotten us to the point that we are without us having to have to worry about it all the time, suddenly now we think that our lives can't go on, our lives can't be anything unless we start burdening ourselves with it. And Psalm 127 says, don't do that. The Lord's behind it all. The Lord's behind you. You are His beloved. Are you a child of God? Well, look at verse 2. So He gives His beloved sleep. God loves you, and He knows that you need sleep. But He also wants you to learn to ask Him for your nightly sleep and all the other things that we've been talking about. So let me offer a few suggestions to you when you cannot sleep. And these are things that I all find in the Scriptures. I mean, the first would be what I've already mentioned to you. Just speak to God about it. God, I need sleep. You made me with the need to sleep. And all that I told you I was praying about, just do that. Would you try that, please? Then it might help to read something boring. Turn to the book of Esther. Why did the book of Esther turn out the way it did? Why is the story of Esther in the Bible? What was the changing point? Well, it happened one night when the king of Persia couldn't go to sleep. Just like how sometimes we can't go to sleep. So I want you to notice Esther 6 and verse 1. And what he ordered to be read to him. Esther 6:1. That night the king could not sleep. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the chronicles. And they were read before the king. Now to me, that would be absolutely boring. That would bore me to death. But I guess it wouldn't some people. Some people would actually get charged up by that. like a long time ago when C-SPAN first came on TV, I heard people talking about like it was this great thing, and I tried to watch it, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. This has got to be the most boring thing I've ever seen. So I never watched it again. Maybe it's gotten better. I don't know, in case those of you who don't know it, but it's just watching the speeches that the senators and congressmen give. At least that's the part that I saw. And them talking back and forth, and I was just like, I can find something better to watch, I think, or something else better to do. But for some people, that charges them up. And maybe that's what the king here wanted. You know, I'm awake. I might as well work. And I understand that. For some people, sermons put them to sleep. For me, they don't. So sometimes when I can't sleep at night, you know, I've got my laptop computer and I go to it. And it's synced with my computer here in my office. So what I do there is automatically up to date on my home computer. So I get on there and I start working on a sermon. And it puts me to sleep. Now, isn't that funny? The preacher puts himself to sleep with his own sermon. But I think what happens is, here is something that engages me and I got my thoughts out. And maybe that's all I needed, and boom, I was ready to go back to bed. So, read something that might be boring to someone else, or maybe read something that might be exciting to you. You may be surprised what will happen. The next one, and it's one that I've already mentioned, but I just want to mention it as a direct point here, as a point of advice, and that is put it in the Lord's hands. Just put your night of rest in the Lord's hands. So let's turn to Psalm 3. There's going to be a couple of passages on this one, all three from Psalms. Psalm 3 shows you just who is in charge of your sleep. Psalm 3, 5. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustained me. That put it all on the Lord. He's the one who sustained you through sleep. Believe it. It's not just that you say it. You have to actually believe what you're saying. Then the next psalm, Psalm 4, verse 8. I will both lay down in peace and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. So I think the idea is, like, I don't know who told it to me one time, but the idea is, God's going to be up all night anyway, so why not just let Him take care of it? Put the matter of sleep in His hands, and whatever, if there's something troubling you or something you're worried about, why not just put it in His hands? He's not going to sleep. In fact, here's a third psalm that I wanted to refer you to, Psalm 121, verse 4, says, behold, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. So, again, he's not sleeping anyway. Let him worry about it. Or just let him put you to sleep. And then the next morning you can get up and do what it is that he wants you to do. If you've not been able to take care of it, by the time it's time to go to sleep, what makes you think that you're going to take care of it while you're supposed to be sleeping? Put in His hands, and that'll free your mind, which I think will do two things. It will, number one, allow you to sleep, but number two, what happens in your mind is often free. Have you ever forgotten something that you wanted to say? Like, there's already, for me in this sermon, there was something I wanted to say, and I stopped for a moment, and I thought, what was that? And I forgot, because I didn't have it written down. But you go off on another topic and all of a sudden it comes back to you, or that happens at night. So sometimes the very thing that's troubling you or the solution that you're looking for, because you're working so hard on it, you can't get it, but you do something to free your mind, whether it's sleeping or getting on another subject or whatever, and all of a sudden, boom, the solution comes up and phew, there it goes. I've had that. For me, one of the biggest things in my life is, besides the living of my own personal life, are my sermons. And there's been so many times when I've been in my office and it just will not click. I can't get the sermon to move. And then I've had in the middle of the night where, like, okay, I guess I'll go to my desk and, get on my laptop and start working, and just, man, I can't type fast enough because all the thoughts are coming out. I just love it when that happens, although I wish it would happen during the day. The next one is this. And this is just something you have to do as a lifelong course for your life. And that is pursue the way of wisdom. And let me show you why in Proverbs chapter 3. Okay, in the first 9 chapters, King Solomon is telling you about wisdom, about the nature of wisdom. And much of it in chapters 2, 3, and 4. He's urging you to search for wisdom, seek it out like you would treasure, and so on. And every once in a while, he drops little treasures as to, you know, here's the benefit for seeking wisdom. Now listen to this, Proverbs 3, 21 through 28, or 26. My son, let them, the things I'm teaching you, not depart from your eyes, keep sound wisdom and discretion, so they will be life to your soul and grace to your neck. Then you will walk safely in your way, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. Yes, you will lie down, and your sleep will be sweet. Do not be afraid of sudden terror, nor of trouble from the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence, and will keep your foot from being caught. So Solomon tells us that just knowing wisdom, and what is wisdom? Wisdom is understanding for life. It is understanding how life operates. It is understanding how people operate. And he says, you get that, and it's going to give you sleep. It's going to give you the ability to sleep. Or how about this right along with it? Matthew 8. Have you ever wondered how Jesus managed to do the following? Matthew 8, 24. And suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea, so that the boat was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. That cracks me up when I read stuff like that in the Bible. And we know it was bad enough that the experienced fishermen who are running the ship were terrified. They thought they were going to be they thought they were going to die. They didn't think they were going to survive. That's how bad it was. And Jesus is sleeping. Well, he's the epitome of wisdom. 1 Corinthians 1 lists him or mentions him as wisdom from God. And he knows the Father is going to take care of him. He knows that he has a purpose and a point to his life, and it's not to die in a boat on that lake. Now, we may not necessarily know that for ourselves, but, you know, we're eventually going to come to death. God knows when that is, and I suppose it's safe to say that he will preserve us until that time. Now, that doesn't mean we can be irresponsible and do things to endanger ourselves. And finally, number 4, is it, or 5, the last point I want to give to you, is to work enough to make yourself tired by night. Ecclesiastes, again from King Solomon, said something that I've always thought in the back of my mind, and so I've always tried to work on it. Sometimes you just can't. The day is built in such a way, you know, some days that you're not able to do exactly what he says here. But I think you'll get the point. Listen to it. Ecclesiastes 5:12. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. So the rich, the implication in this passage is, they have many troubles on their minds, they fear losing their wealth and so on. But the laboring man, he just works hard. It doesn't matter if he eats a lot or eats a little, but he's able to sleep at night. And I've also thought about a man by the name of Jael or Yael in the book of Judges. Turn to Judges chapter 4. And this is when Deborah was the judge. And she was commanded to tell a certain Israelite to lead them in battle against the enemy. But he wouldn't do it unless Deborah came along. And she said she would go, but now the glory for winning the victory was not going to go to him, but it was going to go to a woman. So they're winning the battle, and then finally the commander of the army, he escapes and finds a family that is friendly to him, and he hides in this woman's tent and says that he's thirsty. She gives him some milk to drink, and he goes to sleep. And let me just show you how deeply he went into sleep. Judges 4:21. Then Jael, Heber's wife, okay, I got mixed up on the names there, sorry. I said Jael was the commander of the army, but no, Jael is the one who's going to do something to, I've forgotten the commander's name now. But she took a tent peg and took a hammer in her hand and went softly to him and drove the peg into his temple, and it went down into the ground. For he was fast asleep and weary, so he died. Okay, I'm sure that this woman was used to driving tent pegs a whole lot more than I am. But still, to drive this metal peg through his head all the way through until it went into the ground. If she could do that in one whack, I wouldn't want to mess with that woman or with anyone who could do that. But if it took her more than once, you would think by the first one he would have awakened. But it sounds to me like, you know, maybe once it started to go in, he's so deep into sleep, he didn't feel it. And then, of course, now he's probably starting to die. Is it? I don't know if it's going to touch his brain or not, or what exactly is going to go on there. But why was he so deep in sleep? Well, he has just been fighting a war. He's been running from the Israelites, scared to death. I mean, not that you need to labor this much every day to be able to have a good night's rest, but I'm taking an extreme example to make a point that sometimes you just wear out the body and it has no choice. It wants to sleep. And that's just the way it is. So, the last thing I want to say tonight is, like, same thing that I said this morning and the same thing that I've said for many other sermons. Take the issues of this life and apply them to the Spirit. This morning I talked about work. But in Hebrews 4, the Bible tells us that if we work, we shall rest. We shall rest forever, and that's what heaven is. But now, we don't want to be asleep in the Spirit. We don't want to sleep in the Spirit, because that can be bad. Listen to these passages. Romans chapter 13, verse 11 is urging us as Christians to wake up. Okay, and you know he's not talking about waking up from a night's sleep in the morning. He says, and do this, knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. And he's right, isn't he? He doesn't mean salvation from sin, but salvation from this earth in this case. And that's true. We're closer to the day of our salvation from this earth than we were yesterday. We're a day closer now. And if we live tomorrow, we're another day closer. We don't know how many to go. We could say X amount of days down, but we don't know how many to go, but we just know we've moved closer to it. Every day we move closer to it. So he says, be sure that you stay awake in the Spirit. Ephesians 5, verse 14. I think makes the same point. Ephesians 5:14. Therefore he says, awake you who sleep, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. And then finally, 1 Thessalonians 5. In 1 Thessalonians 5, Paul is speaking about the second coming of Christ. He actually began it clear back in chapter 4, verse 13. I wish they hadn't put the chapter 5 division where they did, but they did. So you keep reading. You start at 4:13. You keep on reading into chapter 5. He's talking about the second coming. And so he then says this about the coming, second coming of Christ. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. Watch doesn't mean that every time you go outside, look up in the skies so you'll make sure you see Christ when he comes. When he comes, you're not going to miss it. The idea is be alert. Be alert in the spirit. Be alert to yourself and the kind of way life that you're living so that you can always be ready to greet the Lord with joy when that time comes. Brother or sister, if you would like our prayers tonight, please come forward now as we stand and sing.